So I'm going to preach now. I don't usually do that at this point in the service, but I'm going to do it today because we are building up to something special that needs a little bit of framing. Our offering today will be a benefit for an organization within Unitarian Universalism that well deserves our generosity, Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism. And as we prepare for that offering, I want to just put it in a little bit of context. So I have a question for us today. And the question is this: who do you see when you say we? Here's what I mean by that. A lot of times, if I am part of a group, I tend to use that little word, we, to make some generalizations about what that group is like and what people in it think. It's very a natural way of speaking. Like, I might say, I have wonderful memories of the time when I was in school learning how to be a minister. And so I might say, my classmates and I, we were very close. Now, when I say that, in my mind's eye, I am seeing many beautiful and dear faces, people I loved then and still loved today. But when I say we were pretty close, my classmates and I, the truth is, when I stop and think about it, that we leaves out more than a few people with whom I was never particularly close, people I never got to know well or just didn't hit it off with for whatever reason. So when I say that simple phrase, we were pretty close, it is partly true, but it is not completely true. When I say we, I see the subset of people that I personally connected with. And that subset is not the full we of everybody who was in that school with me at that time. And so without even meaning to, when I am talking about that group of classmates and I say we, I am thinking of my very special people, my super special people, and ignoring the rest. Now you might be saying, so what? It's no big deal. What does that have to do with anything? Well, what about this one? I know that there have been times when I unthinkingly have referred to this congregation or our Unitarian Universalist faith saying something like this: we're very white here. You ever heard that? Goodness knows, there is a lot of conversation about race in this congregation right now, in our denominational systems and structures, important conversations, necessary conversations. This congregation has been talking about race for years, and not only talking, but really doing the work to become more skillful, to become more truly multicultural in our ways of being together. It is so important that we continue that, and we will. One of the more obvious reflections that one might make about race in this congregation, or indeed in many Unitarian Universalist congregations, one of the more obvious reflections you could make is that purely numerically, most of the congregants here identify as white. Most of the clergy too, including me. But when those of us who identify as white, and I include myself here, when we say stuff like, we're very white here, and let's be clear, most of the time, when that is said, it is with regret. It is with a deep hope for change, for a greater diversity in this community. Still, I wonder, who do we see when we say that we? Whenever there is a generalization about who we are, people are left out. The literal truth is that there are people of color in this congregation, and there have been people of color in this congregation for as long as it has existed, and indeed people of color have had a vibrant presence within Unitarian Universalism, which can and should be traced back to our very earliest days. And so, when I hear that phrase, which I myself have said, not really thinking very carefully, when I hear someone say, we're very white here, I reflect on the faces that I see when I hear those words or when I say that. And when I say those words, the faces that appear in my mind's eye are white faces, which means I am not seeing the faces right here, which are not white. I am literally not seeing them because of the language I use. And that is why I ask, when you say we, who do you see? The literal truth is that we, the Williamsburg Unitarian Universalists, are white, and we are African American, and we are Asian American, and Latinx, Arab American, and so much more. We are all of that. It is true that the percentage of white identified people here is high-ish. That is empirically a fact at this present moment. But I want to urge all of us, and especially those of us who identify as white, I want to urge us not to gloss over the racial and cultural diversity which is already present just because you wish there were more. We do that a lot. We say, oh, I wish we were more diverse. But don't ignore the diversity which is right here. See it. Mark Morrison Reed, who is himself an African-American UU minister, has said, and I'm harking back to the words we heard at the beginning, alone, our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen. But together, our vision widens. So let us widen our vision, all of us, each of us. We are surrounded by amazing stories and amazing people. I want to tell you just about a few people today that I want you to know about. Take the Reverend William Jackson. His picture has just come up on the screens before you. Reverend William Jackson, he was born just a few miles away from here in Norfolk in the year 1818. He was ordained as a Baptist minister. He was a tremendously brave man. In 1850, he rescued the first African American to be arrested under the new and terrible Fugitive Slave Act. He broke him out of jail and smuggled him to safety in Canada. Later, during the Civil War, Reverend Jackson served as a military chaplain with the very famous African American Regiment from Massachusetts. If anybody recalls the film Glory, that told their story. So Reverend Jackson was their military chaplain. He became the first person of color to be commissioned as an officer in the United States Army. He was also a Unitarian, at least in spirit. Though he served Baptist congregations, he found himself more and more drawn to Unitarian ideas. In 1860, he went to a Unitarian minister's conference and declared himself there. He stood up and said, "I want you all to know I am a Unitarian. That is who I believe myself to be." But sadly, his story is marred by the near total indifference of his white colleagues. Instead of embracing him as a new Unitarian, they pretty much said, "Well, that's nice, see you later," otherwise known as "see you never." In fact, they did not really see him. They said to themselves, "He is not part of our we. We don't see him." And that was tragic. Faced with backs turning, he never became part of our movement, except in spirit. And that was a great loss to this faith. Mercifully, there are other places where things happened differently. I was astonished and thrilled doing some research for this sermon to discover that there is a tremendously important history of African-American universalism right here on the peninsula in Norfolk and also in Suffolk. I want to tell you something about this. I think it's just thrilling. The story begins with the Reverend Joseph Jerdon. Joseph Jerdon was born a free African-American in Norfolk County in 1842. Like Reverend Jackson, whom we just heard about, Reverend Jordan was ordained in the Baptist tradition, but he discovered universalism and fell in love with that message of universal salvation. He traveled to Philadelphia to connect with Universalist colleagues there, and he found a warm welcome. His fellow Universalists encouraged him, supported him, and in 1889, he became the first African-American minister to be ordained by the Universalist Church. He founded the first Universalist Church ever to exist right in Norfolk, right over there. In Suffolk, he founded a Universalist school for African-American children, which became known as the Suffolk Normal Training School. Now, unfortunately, the Norfolk congregation closed in 1906, but the school persisted for almost 100 years until 1984. This picture, by the way, is of some of the children who attended the school. Did anybody know this? I had no idea. I had no idea. I am so grateful to Mark Morrison Reed for telling some of these stories and many others in a book that he has published called Darkening the Doorways. It's a history of African Americans within Unitarianism and Universalism. It's a tremendous read, and I commend it to you. He is really helping a lot of us see more widely and see more clearly. Well, after Reverend Jordan retired, a series of strong and gifted African-American leaders kept the school running and thriving. Mary Jordan is one, and her husband, whose name was also Reverend Joseph Jordan, but they were not related as far as we know. They led the Universalist School for years. Their story is wonderful. They started out Presbyterian. But in 1902, they happened to hear a Universalist preacher speak. They had heard a little bit about Universalism, and they were very interested in this lecture. Halfway through the sermon, the story goes, Joseph leaned over to whisper to his wife, "That's what I am." Mary answered, "Make it two." And they were Universalists for the rest of their lives. For years, the National Universalist Sunday School Association enthusiastically supported their work with the school in Suffolk, not only emotionally, but also financially at a significant level. Starting in 1917, the Jordans created lesson plans that Universalist Sunday schools all over the country used to promote respect for African Americans. This was starting in 1917. After the Jordans died, their daughter, Annie B. Willis, took over the school. Here she is. This is Annie B. Willis. From 1929 to 1974, all through the Depression years, the Jim Crow days, the Civil Rights era, she led the Universalist School in its role as a key institution in the Suffolk African American community. She herself was the unofficial mayor of the community. These are our leaders. Reverend Joseph Jordan, Mary Jordan, her husband, the other Reverend Joseph Jordan, their daughter Annie Willis. These are our Universalist leaders whose influence spread across the country and who touched the lives of hundreds of families right here in Virginia. When we talk about Unitarian Universalist history, I want us all to see them, to celebrate them. When you say we, when you talk about this faith, I want you to see them. They are us, and we are them. Blessed be. Thank goodness. And it should be obvious, right? It should go without saying. And yet, the fact is that too many Unitarian Universalists of color have had to struggle to be fully seen in this faith that we all share. Today, we have an opportunity. You are about to hear an invitation to be part of the next wave of support for Unitarian Universalists of color by making a financial or contribution to an organization within our faith that is truly powerful and so needed, Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism. I urge you to give as generously as you can, as you are able. And I want to leave you with, again, the prophetic words of my colleague, Mark Morrison Reed. He says, the central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. There is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. Once felt, it inspires us to act for justice. It is the church that assures us we are not struggling for justice on our own, but as members of a larger community. The religious community is essential, for alone, our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens and our strength is renewed. May it be so today and always. Thank you.